I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
All right, let's get our sponsor first. MarsCon 2021. For more information, listen to this.
The world's longest running comedy music concert series is coming from inside your house!
Wow, that went to a dark place.
Virtual MarsCon 2021 is taking place online for free on March 12th, 13th, and 14th.
Hi, MarsCon!
This year's event will have live stream performances by The Great Luke Ski, Devo Spice, Worm Quartet, Insane Ian, TV's Kyle and Lindzilla, Il Nage, Beth Kinderman, Tom Smith, Throwing Toasters, Amy Englehart, an AMA interview with Ookla the Mock, and this year's music guest of honor, Robbie Ellis. We'll also be doing a virtual Q&A with the man who has been playing drums in Weird Al Yankovic's band for over 40 years, John Bermuda Schwartz.
Drum solo!
For info on how to watch, go to MarsCon.com. And for info on the comedy music track, go to MarsConComedy.com.
And do watch out for flying lobsters.
Thanks for listening, funny music fans. And I hope to see you all at Virtual MarsCon 2021.
MarsCon, it is our happy place.
Yes, it's our happy place. That's another week or so, and then we can have our virtual happy place.
Yeah.
All right, Lo. Let's get to the news story that's kind of been going around for the last week or so since the dropping of The Muppet Show on Disney Plus. We've talked about it, the big question of whether the show will be complete or not, and it's not. Let's get the big ones out of the way. At least as far as the United States is concerned, there are two episodes that are missing from season 5. One of them is a very good reason, and one people are still trying to question on. So, one is an episode featuring Brooke Shields. And, the episode is them all doing Alice in Wonderland, but the reason people are thinking that this might be copyright issue is, Fozzie is dressed as the Tin Man singing songs from The Wizard of Oz. Specifically, we're off to see the wizard.
And yeah, and we've talked before about the kind of contentious nature between Disney and MGM over Wizard of Oz stuff.
Yeah, I think currently the MGM film is kind of owned by Warner Brothers now. Which, even considering Warner Brothers owns HBO Max, yeah, there's already issues there.
Yeah.
And there are people said, oh, they have other Wizard of Oz songs in other episodes, like Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I think it's the combination of using a Wizard of Oz song with Wizard of Oz iconography.
Yeah, that tends to make the copyright, stuff stronger, but of course, yeah, it gets into parody, but when you're using the actual song, then it gets a little bit weirder, and you know, I mean, presumably Disney was going to pay royalties, but I can see why, with the kind of battle now between Disney Plus and HBO Max for viewership, that they might not want to concede that little bit even to Disney.
Yeah, and the second episode missing, again, as far as the American Disney Plus is concerned, is an episode involving Chris Langham. Chris Langham is an offender. I think that's the safest way I can go about it. He was caught with inappropriate pictures of children. And I think that's all that needs to be said about that. And that's why that episode's not even Disney Plus wants to get into that, the conversation.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's understandable, you know, I don't think really that many people are upset about that one.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. I mean, if people want the entire series, they want the entire series.
Well,
but who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the rest are one. There are some episodes that have one or two segments missing from them. How can you tell if an episode is missing something? If it's less than 27 minutes, it's missing something.
Yeah. And you can tell exactly what it's missing on one of our favorite websites on the internet, the Muppet Wiki at muppet.fandom.com. Muppet Wiki has been... bless everybody who has contributed to Muppet Wiki over the years, because it has really helped us every time we talk about Muppets. So,
Most of the spots that have been removed are the UK only spots. These are segments developed just for the UK airing because they have less commercial breaks than America does. So they put a bonus segment in there just to fill that gap. And yeah, most of the stuff is that UK spot missing. The one that a lot of people were questioning is the episode involving Marty Feldman, which features the Sesame Street characters. And they sing the Sesame Street theme song. We've already talked about this, how Sesame Street has an exclusive deal with HBO Max these days.
Yeah.
So while there are episodes that featured Sesame Street characters, like Big Bird and Bert and Ernie, them singing the Sesame Street theme song, that might be going over the line there. Warner might not want to play games on that one.
Yeah.
Considering, again, they're already doing that with the Wizard of Oz stuff, as we said.
Yeah. So, you know, the interesting thing is that a lot of the UK spots were cleared for Disney Plus, which is interesting. Disney Plus does, we've talked sometimes when we do TV shows about the order that they put the episodes up in. Disney Plus seems to be going in original broadcast order, from what I can tell. However, that was not production order, so especially in season one, the first two episodes filmed are at the back end of the season, because that's when they were finally aired. But if you want to kind of see them in production order to see how the characters evolved and stuff, which I personally have been doing that. Once again, Muppet Wiki will tell you the exact production order, and it's really fascinating to watch, because if you watch them in air order, you're watching kind of the characters do one thing for most of the season, and then at the back end of the season, they start acting kind of weird for a few episodes, and then it goes back to normal in season two. But it's because those were filmed first. So.
Yeah. I'm surprised they were able to get them as complete as they are, and this is probably the most complete they'll ever be in an official capacity.
Until Disney absorbs Warner Brothers into the giant behemoth that is the growing mouse.
Disney Max Plus coming in 2028.
Yeah. We joke now, but, you know, we see what happened to The Simpsons when they joked about one day being owned by Disney.
We just reviewed the Fox movie last week.
Yeah. The other thing that we got to mention real quick is there's the second controversy, which is that at least some of the episodes have been tagged with a cultural sensitivity warning.
Yeah.
This is Disney's boilerplate warning of, you know, these episodes contain outdated stereotypes and cultural representations. They were wrong then. They're wrong now. They are presented for historical, you know, preservation rather than being deleted and forgotten about. Personally, I think that's a tactful way to handle it, but a lot of people are mad because it's like, yeah, the Muppets was perfect. Jim was a progressive, you know, inclusive sort of guy, and I need you to know that both of those things are true. Jim was absolutely a progressive guy who wanted, you know, everybody to come together and sing Kumbaya and live in harmony. And also, like everyone else alive at that time, carried certain stereotypes that had never been thought to question, you know?
He's a human. He makes, you know, makes mistakes. And what was culturally okay in the 70s doesn't really fly now. Or there were people complaining about it now, but there was no such thing as social media then. So those people's voices were never heard.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. And, you know, I think if you don't... if you're like, well, I don't remember anything offensive in The Muppet Show, you either haven't seen it since you were a child, or you need to update some of your ideas of what is harmful and what is not. Because even before, you know, I started watching it again on Disney Plus, I was like, oh yeah, I can name several sketches off the top of my head that I'm like, ooh, that would not, I would not air that now. So, you know, it is what it is, and as much as we all love Jim Henson and the Muppets and, you know, the continuing legacy there, it doesn't do anybody any good. It doesn't do the artists any good or society any good to overlook missteps. And that's what these were. I'm not saying, like, this is just, you know, horrible. You know, we've decried some things on this show, like Song of the South and stuff, where it's just like, nah, there's nothing salvageable in there. This is just more mildly cringy in some respects. I don't think there's anything that's, like, overtly intending to be harmful. It's just like, oh, you didn't think about that one too hard, did you? You know, yeah. A lot of stuff in The Muppet Show comes from old vaudeville because it's kind of what Jim was riffing off of it, especially in Muppet Show specifically. And if you know anything about vaudeville, about 90% of vaudeville wouldn't play in front of an audience today. I mean, it's just like you'd be run out of town for trying to do half of those. You know, things. So it is what it is. I think it's fine that it's got the warning there. Because it is, you know, it's kind of difficult to talk about in some ways because we love the show so much. But you have to critically engage with the things you love, or you're not doing yourself any favors. So there it is. Like the, you know, 99% of it that is awesome still. And then, you know, maybe watch the sketches once. Tell your children, like, you know, what do you think might be wrong with this? And then use it as a teaching moment. And then just kind of fast forward past those in the future if you want. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, let's move on to our main feature here. The original 1977 Pete's Dragon, and another Don Bluth film that we were talking about. He didn't write it, but he did was the main animator on this for Elliot the Dragon himself. And if you watched a lot of Don Bluth films, you can definitely tell this is Don Bluth's art style with the way Elliot looks.
Yeah, this really does scream Don Bluth in style. His style changed a little bit between this time and you know, the 10 years or less between this and when he really started getting popular on his own accord. But you can already see that style developing in this character. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and of course they did remake this movie back in 2016. I have not seen it.
A remake so memorable that I actually told you I had forgotten they remade it until I was looking up the movie on Disney Plus to watch it, and two versions came up, and I went, oh yeah, that was a thing that happened, wasn't it?
Yeah, so this is one of those weird things where this is part of my childhood because I watched this all the time on the Disney Channel back when I was growing up. And we've already established you got the Disney Channel much later than I did.
Yeah, I was in my late teens by the time Disney Channel was in my household.
That was around when it stopped being a premium channel, becoming a basic cable channel.
And where I lived, it was still upper tier cable, but it wasn't premium like HBO where you had to pay separate anymore. It was bundled.
Back in my day, we had to pay extra for the Disney Channel.
Well, now we also have to pay extra for the Disney Plus and all the streaming sites. I mean, we're going back to exactly what we did when we were kids, you know, where you kind of paid per channel. So,
Peach Dragon, like a lot of these movies during this era, was one of those leftover Walt ideas. Walt wanted to make this back in the 50s as part of his TV show, as a TV special. And it's actually based off an unpublicized story that came across Walt's desk, and he said, I really like this, let's buy the rights, and, you know, I didn't know this until doing the research for this episode.
I think, honestly, that this might have worked better as a TV special.
Agreed.
Even as a film, it has the feel of this should have been like a, you know, a TV movie.
And that's the same kind of feeling we had when we saw Babes in Toyland a few months ago.
Yeah. It probably would have worked better with commercial breaks and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
But this was also Disney trying to recreate the magic that was Mary Poppins. And they did a lot of like this, and then Bedknobs and Broomsticks and stuff like that. Mary Poppins was the big musical hit, and they wanted to capture lightning in a bottle a second time. Didn't quite get there with this one. It was, although there is, the animation is definitely better, and the integration between live action and animation was done better in this movie.
You think it was done better in this movie than it was in Mary Poppins?
Well, in Mary Poppins, everything is animated. This was an actual animated character on a live action movie.
Yeah, I think it works better in Mary Poppins.
And, you know, we're not quite at Roger Rabbit level yet.
Yeah, the thing that surprised us both about Roger Rabbit was how well that held up. And Pete's Dragon looks so slapdash in comparison. I mean, it was about a decade before. So, you know, but even, like I said, Mary Poppins still feels that all those effects feel good still watching that movie. And this one is just kind of constantly like, oh, his, you know, he's supposed to be holding the neck of the dragon, but his hand goes through the neck of the dragon, you know, it's like that sort of thing.
This has definitely been upscaled a bit. For at least DVD quality, but you can kind of tell some of the green screen effects were really, really bad in this one.
Yeah.
Especially there's a part where they're going into a cave and it's very clearly a set, and they play some B-roll footage of them at a seaside to make it look like the cave is by sea, or the part towards the end where they're in the storm on the ship.
Yeah, it doesn't really hold up as well visually as you would hope.
So so this was a big thing for Disney. They made a big thing about this. You know, they made a float for the Matrix electrical parade of Pete and the Dragon, to the point where they actually had, I want to say, the Rose Bowl.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight the Orange Bowl honors the most unique event staged in America in 1977. Disneyland and Walt Disney World's incredible spectacular of nighttime pageantry and imagination in electrical sights and sounds. The Main Street Electrical Parade.
First time the electrical parade was done outside of Disneyland. even getting the actor from the movie to ride on the float.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the new Walt Disney motion picture Pete's Dragon, meet the stars. Elliot the Dragon and Sean Marshall.
Boy, what a way to start the new year. Out here in the middle of the Orange Bowl with all these people. See, Elliot, I told you you'd have a great time.
Whoa!
This movie didn't quite do so well. Like, they were hoping for Mary Poppins numbers, and they didn't get it.
Well, it wasn't, like, a complete flop. It made over its budget, so it did turn a profit, but it didn't turn, like, a mega profit like they were hoping. And the thing about it, too, is, you know, there are people like you know, who... You saw it in childhood and you have fond memories of it and everything. But this is not really like I've never run into anybody that's like, oh man, I really love Disney movies. My favorite movie is Pete's Dragon.
Yeah.
Oh, it came to the point where, you know, like you said, when you when they did the remake, a lot of people went, wait, what? There was a what's this movie now? They say it's a remake of something, but like, I mean, this movie was not entirely forgotten, but it's not like one of the best remembered Disney films, you know?
That, like, some of the hardcores were kind of wanting the CG version of the old Elliot Dragon, or especially the song Candle on the Water being used in the movie, which the remake did use the song, but it was mostly a lot of people who hadn't seen the original film since they were children, as you do, you know, complaining about, oh, my childhood kind of deal.
Yeah.
Eh, it's usual. Let's kind of get into who's in this.
Yeah, so they assembled a pretty interesting cast for the time. Either big stars at the time or stars from the past that the adults would remember. So the first one that we need to talk about is Pete himself. Not really a huge star at the time, but he was a child actor you'd see here and there.
Pete's
Dragon, Sean Marshall. Pete's Dragon was probably his biggest role. He worked kind of steadily as a child, and then right about 1980 he went, I don't want to act for the rest of my life, and he instead joined the U.S. Merchant Marine. And he went off and he did that, had a whole career in the Merchant Marine. I think he's retired now. Last anybody heard from him, he seemed to be living in New Mexico. So, there you go.
He made his money. He got out. Not bad.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing with child actors. Sometimes they continue because they don't know what else to do. But sometimes they get older and they go like, nah, this was kind of more my parents' thing. Or it was fun to do while I was a child, but now I want to do, you know, something else. And I guess what he wanted to do was be part of the Merchant Marine. So there you go. Kind of the big star of the time and the big name leading the movie is Helen Reddy.
As Nora. The Lightkeeper's daughter.
And mother figure to Pete. She is best known even to this day for singing the song I Am Woman.
I am woman, hear me roar. In numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
It became the anthem of the feminist movement in the 70s. And she was absolutely huge, a singer there, originally from Australia, and then came over and got U.S. citizenship, I believe. But yeah,
there's 1 second in this movie where her accent slips and you can really tell it is.
Yeah. But she was an absolute icon of the feminist movement, And it was kind of interesting seeing her take a role, you know, this kind of a really a traditionally feminine role here. You know, she's very motherly. She's very, you know, she's the doting fiance waiting for her lost love kind of thing. So it's kind of interesting that she was kind of like the strong independent woman persona in her real life, and then she does a Disney movie and she's immediately like, you know, trad wife material or something. I don't know. But yeah, that was kind of her big thing. They recently made a movie about her life. I think it's up on Netflix. But anyway, moving on, kind of the biggest name of the film, of course, to this day still, is Mickey Rooney as Lampy.
Nora's dad.
Yeah, Nora's, I mean, does she ever call him dad? She refers to him as Lampy a few times, but...
She said her first appearance is, "Has anyone seen my father?"
Oh, okay.
Lampy, the alcoholic lighthouse keeper.
Yeah, and this is so broadly played alcoholic. You know, it's definitely a film alcoholic and not like a real life alcoholic, but
it's a Disney alcoholic.
Yeah, it's a goofy comedy alcoholic. But you know, of course, Mickey Rooney, the biggest child star in the world alongside Judy Garland. And kept going. He did a lot of things for Disney throughout his life, you know, kept bouncing back and forth. Mostly worked with MGM in his younger years, though. And then in his later years would do more things with Disney. But
every Christmas he's Santa Claus.
Put one foot in front of the other, and soon you'll be walking across the floor.
I don't know what more you can say about him. Absolute legend.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows Mickey Rooney. As Elliot the Dragon, we have Charlie Callis, who was a comedian. And he did a lot of work on the talk show circuit at the time. He did a lot of stand-up bits, you know, where he'd come on like Johnny Carson and stuff and do his little stand-up bits. And his stand-up bits included a lot of vocal effects, where he would do much like he did with Elliot, where he would do tongue clicks and strange noises and all that kind of stuff. In this movie, Elliot never talks. He just does weird noises.
He says two actual words, Pete and wow!
Moving on, we have Jim Dale as Dr. Terminus, the quack that shows up and tries to capture Elliot. One of the main villains of the movie. There are two groups of villains, and Dr. Terminus is one. He is not as well known in America, but in England he was well known as one of the stars of a series of films called Carry On. It was over 30 movies, I think, in that series, and it was a really well-known franchise in the UK that never really broke here, but it was a lot of broad slapstick comedy, sex comedy stuff. Over here, he did Pete's Dragon, and then he also had a part on the TV series Pushing Daisies for ABC, so... Moving on, his sidekick, Dr. Terminus's sidekick, Hoagie, is played by the legendary Red Buttons, comedian. At the same time, started out on Broadway, another kind of, not vaudeville, he showed up kind of in the war years, but sort of the successor to that, ended up having his own variety show, the Red Buttons show, and then later went on to do a lot of dramatic roles. I kind of remember him best because he's in the Poseidon Adventure, which is one of those great 70s disaster films when they had the big Towering Inferno and Earthquake and all those movies in the 70s during their big disaster film craze. So that's what I mostly remember him from. Moving on, as our other kind of villain of the film, we have Shelley Winters.
It's my Gogan.
Yeah, another one from the Poseidon Adventure, actually, which is kind of how I knew her. But she won an Academy Award for her part in Diary of Anne Frank, the 1959 film. But was always, I mean, you know her around from lots of things. She was in A Place in the Sun, which is one of the great films of the American film canon.
Though honestly, almost unrecognizable in this movie due to the fat suit and the makeup they put on her.
Yeah, they really did. Well, I mean, by this point, she had gotten larger. You know, a lot of her earlier roles, she was a very svelte woman. But, you know, they didn't put her in all that makeup in Poseidon Adventure, and she was also kind of the heftier woman in that group, you know? Mm.
I apologize.
They did cover her in a lot of makeup. You're not wrong. You know, they put warts on her face and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it is very difficult to tell this is Shelley Winters. But if you listen to her voice, she has a very distinctive accent in her voice. Moving on, kind of in a couple of bit roles here, we have two actors of note to television fans. Especially if you were watching television or a fan of television from the 60s and 70s. The first one is the mayor of Passamaquoddy is Jim Backus, Thurston Howell III himself from
Gilligan's Island. The original voice of Mr. Magoo.
And the original voice of Mr. Magoo. Interestingly, one of the other people in the movie, Jane Keane, excuse me, who plays the school teacher, she was also a voice in the Mr. Magoo Christmas special. So there you go. But yeah, most people will remember him either as Mr. Magoo, like you said, or as Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island, the millionaire, if you don't remember. He is basically a cameo in this movie. He is on screen for all of 2.5 minutes, I think. And the other one that's kind of note is Jeff Conaway as one of the Gogan boys. You can't really tell it's him, again, because they covered all the Gogans in heavy makeup and wigs and buck teeth and warts and all that kind of stuff. But you will remember Jeff Conaway from the movie Grease. He was also Bobby on Taxi. I think this is the third time we've talked about a taxi actor on the show. We've talked about Christopher Lloyd and Danny DeVito prior to this. And also kind of close to both of our hearts, I think, he was Zach on Babylon 5.
A hickey from Kinnicky is like a Hallmark card.
Yeah. He was Kinnicky in Grease. I was fortunate enough to meet him back during the Babylon 5 years as he toured the convention circuit. Very nice guy. Very tragic kind of life and death, unfortunately, for him. But he was always very kind to me and everyone I knew, so... It was interesting to see him in this for me, because I was like, oh, that's kind of a sweet memory for me. There we go. That's kind of the highlights of our cast here. As you can tell from that rundown, a lot of people who would have been either just about to break big in the 70s or they had big names like Helen Reddy.
Let's get through this, because I forgot this was a 2-hour movie.
This movie, there was one point in the movie where I just thought, I've been watching this movie for my entire life, and I paused it to see how long it had left, and it still had over an hour to go.
This movie is very, very slow, and it, this could have done within half an hour of this movie cut, and you would have not missed anything. So let's kind of get through the main part of the story. So we
There's
start...
a story to this?
Yeah,
wow. I totally missed that there was a story to this.
So we have our boy Pete, and he's on his invisible dragon, Elliot, running away from his adopted family, the Gogans. And they, even though they've adopted him, they have the paperwork to prove it, they treat him more as labor. They say they bought him. They never say that they adopted him.
Yeah, they call it a bill of sale.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the paperwork they carry around does actually say a bill of sale. It doesn't say anything about adoption. So they might have bought him from a shady orphanage. I mean, you know, yeah, those things have happened and still happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, so they're running away from the Gogans, and the Gogan family, you know, the boys even say to mom, why don't we just go buy another kid and let this kid go? Say, well, we spent our last $50 on this kid, and we're going to get our investment. And they have a song about it called The Happiest Home in These Hills, because, oh, Petey, please come home. We'll treat you good. Yeah, we're going to chain you up. We're going to beat you up real good, boy.
The interesting thing is, not interesting, but it's one of those things that I'm not sure you'd really get away with in a film now, is that Pete has kind of a bruise on his face for the first part of the movie, and it is later confirmed that he was beaten by the Pa Gogan.
Yeah.
And they actually show, you know, that he's got bruises, you know, visible marks from the abuse, which is...
If you're not paying attention, you'll just think it's dirt. But yeah, they straight up say, you know, where'd you get these bruises?
Yeah, they bring attention to it in the film. And I was kind of surprised about that, because at first I also thought it was dirt. And then Helen Reddy makes a point of being like, no, these are bruises, and he was beaten.
So, yeah, there's a whole song about how they're going to get Pete back and work him even harder and try to convince him that they're going to love him and care for him and treat him like the son that he should be treated as. And that's our opening number. Okay. I don't know how much you could say about it. Again, this thing goes on for 10 minutes. It could have been two.
Yeah, this is the opening number that will not end. I mean, it really is. Just
when you think it's over and they go to dialogue, they start the song again.
I don't know. I'm going to say this about the songs already. There are lots of songs in this movie. Only one of them is a song anybody remembers. And honestly, nobody even remembers that song anymore.
There are like 12 songs in this movie. Only one of them is actually good.
I'm not even sure it was a good song, but it did happen to be a hit for Helen Reddy on the Adult Contemporary chart. I had never seen this movie until watching it for this. When I watched it, I'm like, yeah, nothing about this movie is memorable to me. You know, I've never seen this before. But I did see the song from this in, I used to have a piano book of like Disney songs. And this was included, and I always tried to figure out how it would go, like tried to play it on the piano to be like, what is the tune to this song? I wasn't even close. Now that I've heard it in the movie, I was like, oh, wow, that wasn't even close to the tune I was singing for this song.
Are we talking Hello Rennie songs, or are we talking about a different song in the film?
No, it's Candle on the Water, the Helen Reddy song. It was in a Disney songbook that I had, and I kept trying to play it on the piano, and I don't know if it was like a bad transcription or what, but now that I've heard the real song, I was like, oh, this is not at all what I thought this song sounded like. And honestly, I couldn't hum it for you now.
Yeah, let's kind of move on. So the Gogans, after falling in the mud, thanks to invisible dragon interference, Pete and Elliot are alone. It's the next day, and we get another scene that's about another 10 minutes long that could have been two, where they sing their friendship song, I Love You Too. This scene really only exists to show off their integration of animation and live action, because most of it is Elliot swinging Pete back and forth while trying to make it look like an animated character is actually holding up a real person.
Yeah. And as we've mentioned before, sometimes it works, but a lot of the times it doesn't. This is also a very forgettable song. That's going to be a theme.
So, yeah, let's skip ahead here. Pete and Elliot reach the town of Passamaquoddy, which apparently is a real town in Maine, which makes sense since they're fishermen and they catch crabs or lobsters. Hi, Cornflake.
Yeah. Hi, Cornflake. We miss you.
So, yeah, this is an actual town in Maine. I don't think they actually filmed on the actual Passamaquoddy since most of this place looks like sets, but we'll go ahead.
And, yeah, no, it was all in California, including the lighthouse. Filming locations.
So they're in the town of Passamaquoddy, Maine. Pete starts playing around as children do. He takes a stick and kind of runs it over a fence. And Elliot tries to mimic Pete and ends up kind of destroying fences and stepping in cement and generally causing trouble. But because Elliot's invisible, everyone blames Pete for it.
Yeah, the entire town turns on this kid in moments.
What kind of guardian are you, Elliot? You're supposed to be protecting this kid and you're getting this kid in trouble. That's a theme in this movie.
Yeah. Also, we meet the school teacher who is, yeah, we've got characters that beat a child and we've got characters that try to kill a dragon. But man, I really hate this school teacher.
What is with the school kids hopping? Is that a thing?
They have a little march
and then they kind of hop on the beats or whatever.
I just think that this school teacher has problems with her brain, maybe, and that's what causes all the weirdness.
So yeah, she starts yelling at Pete because he's not going to school. He's a strange kid in the town, and Elliot tries to do a prank by hooking her petticoat onto a nail. It's on the board. He says, no, Elliot, don't do that. He tries to get it off, and it ends up ripping her petticoat off, and he blames Pete for ripping her petticoat off. Again, this whole thing is Elliot is trying to protect Pete, but ends up getting Pete into much, much more trouble than he was already in, which is the theme of this movie.
Yeah.
So after all of this, after the town is already turned on him, and we get an embarrassing moment from the mayor, one of his few 1 second appearances in this movie, and they all blame Pete. It's him, he's causing all these problems. So they run off, and Pete berates Elliot for, hey, we just got here and you're ruining everything, a brand new town that don't know who we are and ruining things already. Enter Lampy, coming out of a bar because he's an alcoholic and that's a character trait in this movie, who bumps into Pete, sees Elliot, is immediately scared, runs back into the bar, and we get another song, I Saw a Dragon.
Also a forgettable song.
So yeah, like, you know, it's played up for laugh. Oh, he's a drunk, he's imagining dragons, and everyone's there, and they're laughing at him. Hey, yeah, you saw a dragon, Lampy, hey.
This movie would have been better with songs from Imagine Dragons. Just gonna say that.
Enter Nora, his daughter, who is looking for her father. And as soon as she gets into the bar to get her father, she is immediately grabbed and groped by the patrons.
Because it's a kid's movie.
But it's all good because it ends in a dance number where they're all dancing on beer barrels. Because Disney movie. And eventually all the beer barrels pop and alcohol spills all over the bar. And thousands of dollars of alcohol is lost. And this poor, poor bartender is losing his, you know, merchandise.
Yeah, and now the bar goes out of business.
That's alcohol abuse right there. But, you know, they all had dancing and good fun and everyone's laughing, so it's okay.
Yeah.
So they bring Nora brings her dad home. They're at the lighthouse. And Nora sees Pete going into a nearby cave on the bottom of the river, where she goes and tells him, hey, so when the tide comes in, it floods the cave, you shouldn't be in here. But, you know, at the same time this is happening, Pete and Elliot are having a fight over what happened in town. But Pete forgives Elliot because they're friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we're at. And, yeah. So Nora takes Pete in because, in her mind, this is a little homeless kid. He needs a warm place to eat, to sleep, some warm food in his belly. And this is where we get the first mention of the Gorgons abusing Pete. As we said before, you know, there are bruises on himself. He's all filthy, you know. And
yeah, and he specifically says to Nora, because she hasn't really done much at this point in the movie except invite him to spend the night and eat some food.
Yeah.
And yet this little bit is enough to make Pete say, nobody has ever been this kind to me before. I will never forget you.
Yeah, he explains that he's run away from the Gorgons before, but the orphanage caught him and sent him back. But he's going to keep on running because he doesn't want to go back to the Gorgons. And yeah, Nora is the first person in his entire life that's ever shown him kindness. Which is kind of sad.
I will. Yeah, it is very sad. But I will point out that you keep calling them the Gorgons, which are mythical creatures from Greek myth, and not the Gogans, which are the name of the family.
Gogans, yeah.
Although you could see Ma Gogan with, like, snakes coming out of her head.
So anyway, yeah. And he mentions that the only friend he has is Elliot the dragon, which leads to a song called It's Not Easy, where Pete describes Elliot, and the way he describes Elliot is not the way they animated Elliot.
Nope, it would have been more interesting. The way everybody describes Elliot in this movie, because Mickey Rooney describes Elliot in the earlier I Saw a Dragon, and it's all like, you know, oh, he's got big red eyes and vicious teeth, and just like, no, that's not. This is the most. The funniest thing about this movie is that every time an adult sees Elliot, they're like, oh my goodness, don't eat me. You're such a vicious dragon. And this is like the most twee looking dragon. Yeah, even my dog is upset about it. this is the most twee looking dragon you have ever seen. Like, this is the most. It just looks cuddly and goofy. Like, you, this is not a ferocious dragon.
Yeah. So also we get a bit of Nora's backstory as Pete notices a picture of a sailor on the wall, wondering who that person is. And we find out this is Nora's fiance, Paul, who died a year ago in a shipwreck.
Yeah, he has been lost at sea.
And that's, you know, that's it. 'Cause he asked, you know, why aren't you, you know, you're an adult woman. Shouldn't you be married? That I was going to get married. And then we go into the whole story about Paul, because he's a kid, and in kids' minds, adult women and adult men, they're supposed to be married by a certain age because they're kids. And that's how they think.
The thing about this is it's, you know, I guess you could say it's a cute bonding number, but none of these songs actually move the plot along in any kind of, I mean, what plot there is.
Yeah.
It's so, you know, there, I think that's what makes so many of them forgettable, is that it's just
a song for the sake of a song.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we need a song here. And then they just plop a song in and mention a dragon a few times and it's okay. You know?
Yeah. So let's skip ahead.
Well, we have to remember the promise. Because it's, I guess, what plot there is. This is kind of important. Pete, when he finds out about Paul, he says, I'm going to talk to Elliot about Paul. And since she believes that Elliot is just an imaginary friend, she's like, okay, you do that. So.
Yeah. I think it's the fact that the dragon is invisible, but again, she never sees a dragon until the very end, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. So let's skip ahead and to the next day where we enter Dr. Terminus and Hoagie, and they are on the run from the previous town that they were in. And they're heading toward Passamaquoddy, which they've been there before, and the town remembers them. And these two are snake oil salesmen selling fake medicines. We're not even sure this man's a real doctor. So yeah, they've been to the town before, the town remembers them, even setting up traps to get the doctor. And they're going to confront him over the last time he was in the city, because all the medicines that they sold to the town people had screwed them up. One woman got really fat, another one had their hair turned pink, and other such nonsense-y things.
Yeah.
But
Terminus always has a thing, oh, but that is a lovely shade of hair, you know. Oh, but there's more of you to love now, you know.
Yeah, so he has the gift of gab. He's a good showman. And he uses that showmanship with Hoagie transforming into different costumes to get out of trouble. And it works, because this town is gullible as hell. And the town buys his fake medicines. Again. Great going, Passamaquoddy.
Yeah, you're town full of brilliant geniuses, aren't you?
Let's get back to our main characters. And after Pete has told Elliot about Paul, we kind of get a little moment from Nora as she goes to the top of the lighthouse, singing to her lost love, the title song for this movie, the song that everybody knows from this movie, Candle on the Water. As a love song, it's not too bad.
I always thought that the title was dumb until I realized that, okay, it's supposed to be a lighthouse reference. Because I was like, well, a candle on the water, you know, she's like, I'll be your candle on the water. I'll always burn for you and you'll always have my light. And I'm like, that's not what happens to candles on water. I don't know if you've ever, you know, put a candle in the water, but that's not what happens to it.
Again, the song is not bad. Again, like you said, this song was a hit. And it's the only song anyone actually knows from this movie.
It's not exactly a song you'd hear at karaoke or weddings or whatever today.
Yeah, you're not gonna get the Best of Disney, and this is gonna be right next to Supercalifragilistic. Or, you know, this is no Let It Go.
Yeah. I mean, what is?
Yeah, it's true. Maybe a certain villain song from WandaVision, but that's a different thing. Anyway, let's, you have anything else to say about Candle in the Water?
This is filmed like a music video before there really were, like, music videos. I mean, there were music videos at this point. I'm not saying there weren't. But this comes off, like, filmed for MTV 3 or 4 years before MTV would be a thing.
Yeah.
It's just her at the top of the lighthouse. It focuses on her. It doesn't go anywhere else. She's constantly backlit and surrounded by wind. And, you know, this is very much looks like a promotional music video rather than part of this movie, because it doesn't look like anything else in this film.
Of all the musical bits in this movie, this is the one that actually feels like it was filmed for a musical.
Yeah.
Especially like other parts of the movie, like the beer dancing and the friendship dance and some of the later songs we'll get. Like, this feels like we need to make this the best scene in the movie, because this is what we're going to sell this movie on.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go back to this bar where Lampy is once again getting drunk, because that's his one character trait. And he runs into Terminus, and he tells Dr. Terminus if he knows anything about dragons. And it took me all this time to figure out the joke, because he says, oh, I see a bunch of dragons and all in walking down the streets in their beautiful, colorful outfits. Is he talking about drag queens?
I don't think so. But, I mean, if it is, that's a 70s joke rather than the time period this is set in, which is vague turn of the century. So maybe, but I think it was probably more meant to be a joke about you know, drunk see pink elephants kind of thing. You know, I think that was probably the intention of that, but I don't know. But Lampy and Hoagie end up kind of deciding to bond over their mutual one character trait of being a drunk and decide to go hunt down the dragon to prove it exists.
Yes, so they go down to the cave. They, you know, again, drunk as a skunk here. You know, trying to do things to make the dragon like them because in their drunken minds that the dragon is going to kill them. So Hoagie offers Elliot a drink. Opens his, that is the biggest flask I've ever seen. But yeah. pours the contents of the flask into Elliot's mouth, which causes him to belch fire.
The first time we've seen him actually have anything to do with fire in this movie.
Remember that. But, of course, they are scared because they think that the dragon is gone feral. In reality, again, he's just had water, and when a dragon belches, they breathe fire because this movie says so. The next day is time Nora takes Pete to school. We get another bit of story element where the fishermen label Pete bad luck, as all of the fish in the surrounding seawater have disappeared ever since Pete came to town. Pete is saying it's Elliot's fault. We're never given a reason why it's Elliot. Maybe Elliot is feeding on the fish. We don't know. It's never explained in the movie.
Or maybe the fish are just like, cheese it, there's a dragon.
Yeah.
I mean, and if a dragon came to my town, I'm not sure I'd stick around, you know?
Yeah, and there's a song that they kind of clunk their way into a Nora singing a song about how there's room for everyone in their town. This song could have been cut. There's no reason for the song to be in the movie. So they eventually make it to the school, and they convince...
You know, I will say one thing about that song is it's the closest thing to a moral that this movie has. I actually liked it better than most of the songs in the movie because it seemed to have a point.
Yeah, I could see where you're coming from. Like, there's room for everyone here, even a dragon.
Yeah, and of course she's using the dragon as a metaphor because the rest of the town has kind of just decided there's a dragon. And she's the only one that's like, oh, it's an imaginary friend, isn't that cute? But it's very much an inclusivity, harmony, social justice-y kind of song. But it doesn't overdo it, I guess, because of the metaphor.
I could see that.
I think so. I'm less harsh on that song than I am most of the songs in this film.
So after our little moral song about inclusivity, we get to the school and the teacher has a bunch of questions to ask. You know, where's your birth certificate? Where are your records from your previous school? Which Nora kind of says, oh, there was a fire and all his records have been destroyed. But he knows his timetables. He knows this. He knows that. He should, you know, maybe you should just give him an education. Apparently he cannot deny a child an education. So she brings the kid in. And there's issues between this teacher and Nora going back further than this movie tells us.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it?
It's possible that that was also Nora's teacher at some point. I'm going to guess that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems likely.
Like, they give each other the fake smiles, and as soon as they turn around, like, ugh. There's issues here. And it starts, you know, Pete's school, first day at school, starts nice. Until Elliot gets involved and starts playing around with the school bell. Which, of course, gets Pete in trouble because despite the fact that Pete is in the school when it happens, the teacher blames Pete for the school bell ringing.
Yeah, she's physically looking at him, sitting in his seat, not doing anything, but somehow it's his fault.
Just because his hand would happen to be on the rope when he was stopping the bell.
Yeah.
This teacher has issues.
Oh, yeah.
Which explains why Nora hates her.
Well, I also hate her, so there we go.
So, because this is turn-of-the-century America, disciplinary actions happen. She takes the old ruler over the hands, and Pete is trying to tell Elliot, it doesn't hurt that much, don't get involved, don't do anything. But because he's talking to Elliot, the teacher now gets the yardstick and goes for the butt smacks. That is enough for Elliot to smash through the entire wall of the school, scaring everybody, putting the dunce cap on the teacher, and busting out through the other side of the school.
Leaving a very cartoony dragon shape in the side of the school.
Yes, so if you didn't believe there was a dragon before, it made the teacher believe.
Well, yeah, this is the point in the movie where, like, everybody in town now absolutely believes in the dragon, except for Nora. Well, and at the end of the movie, the mayor. Yeah. But that's a different story. But yeah, everybody else in the town is just like, yep, that's a dragon. There's a dragon. There's too many weird things going on.
Yeah, it may not be a dragon, but there's something going on, and it has to do with that kid.
Yeah.
But again, there's two giant dragon-shaped holes in the side of the school, which is enough for Dr. Terminus to believe that the dragon is real, and looks up that dragon parts are good for making medicines, which leads to another villain song, Every Little Piece.
One of the worst villain songs I've heard.
Yeah, this is not a good villain song.
It's very boring as villain songs go. But honestly, it's one of the more realistic villain songs, because it's like, we're going to murder something and sell it for cash because all we care about is money. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's pretty realistic as a motivation for a villain.
So, yeah. Which leads to Dr. Terminus going up to the lighthouse and offering to buy Elliot from Pete. He's going to buy the dragon and use his parts in his medicine. And Elliot rejects the offer, saying, you know, I don't own him. I can't sell it to you, and I don't want to sell it to you. But an offer he does accept is Nora and Lampy's offer to live with them, which leads us to another song, Brazzle Dazzle Day, which this is one of the highest, this is one of the main songs for this movie, people. This is the song they play for him in the Main Street Electrical Parade.
And it's possibly the worst song in the film. I kind of hated this song more than any other song.
This song did not make you have a brazzle dazzle day?
I kind of want to punch anybody who uses the term brazzle dazzle day, because that's not a term. That's not a thing we say. I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but that's the first time you've ever said those words, is referencing this movie.
This is really them trying to get the spark of supercalifragilistic. This is, you know, let's do some made up words and have a happy song around it. And the song itself is again, they're singing this while they're cleaning the lighthouse and they're goofing off. And we don't need to see Mickey Rooney shaking his booty on a windowsill.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's kind of move on from that. The Gogans are back, and they want Pete. And the Gogans have the law on their side. Like we said, they have a bill of sale. Pete is their legal property. And they sing about it in a song called Bill of Sale, which is probably the best villain song in this movie.
And honestly, that's kind of sad, because most of it is a rehash of their first song. It's just, we're going to make him do a lot of work because we bought him, which is all stuff that we established in the first song.
Yeah, but now they're saying it directly to the people. Let's, to backtrack a bit, they're going to grab Pete and they got to hold down Nora. So the two sons are arguing of who gets to hold Nora. I want to hold her. No, I want to hold her. And Pa Gauguin says, I'm going to settle this. I'm going to hold her. You hold her like my boys want to hold her, and you be holding your head. Which is the best thing Ma Gauguin says in this entire movie. Go her.
It's very rare that a Disney movie kind of says, like, nope, this was a sexual thing. That's what we were meaning. Yep, that's exactly what it was supposed to be.
There is... I mean, I actually had the soundtrack for this movie for a while. And there is part of the song that actually is not in this in the film. And that has a lot to do with how the segment ends with Elliot ramming the Gauguin's boat and launching them all in the air, and their song gets cut off as they fall into the water.
We gotta build a sail right here. We gotta build a sail right here. We gotta build a sail right here.
So Nora in the segment says, get out of here before I count to five. And on the soundtrack, she says,
we got a bill of sale right here.
I'll protect him.
I will protect him as long as I'm alive, to finish the rhyme. But we never hear that in the film. That would have made a lot of sense in this movie, to kind of show that she's starting to care for the kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, we need, you know, we need Shelley Winters falling in water, comedically holding a wet bill of sail over her head as she tries to get out of the water.
Yeah.
So, back to the bar. I forgot how much part of this movie is in this bar.
Yeah, and a lot of this movie takes place in the bar.
Like, they must have made this set very expensively to use it as much as they are in this movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're at the bar, and Dr. Terminus comes to the Gauguins because apparently he saw everything that happened, even though we didn't see him on screen. And they come to a deal. He will get them Pete, but they have to get him the dragon. Now, keep in mind that they have not been seeing anything that we've been seeing so far. So, much like Nora, they believe that the dragon isn't real. And that everyone in the town has gone loco. Because when we first see the Gauguins come into town, they mention dragon and everyone scares off. Yeah, we're in the right place. So, they laugh about it and, yeah, we'll get you the stupid dragon. At the same time, the doc convinces the town folks, hey, you've been talking about your fish being missing. If we take care of this dragon, all your fish will come back because, like we said before, they're all gullible idiots.
It's kind of where the townspeople have been going with it anyway.
It's true. Again, they blame it all on Pete.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They label him a bad luck and a jinx and all that. So, yeah, getting rid of this supposed dragon might be enough to fix the problem. So a storm is coming into town this night, and on the water during the storm there's a ship, and we see Paul is on board the ship. Elliot has found Paul and he's coming home. And once Pete tells Nora this, she's no longer entertaining his fantasies.
Yeah, she's like, you need to give up fantasy, and so do I, you know. Paul is very, very dead.
As this is happening, Dr. Terminus has come to the lighthouse to get Pete, saying that Elliot has run amok in the town. At the same time, Hoagie is going to the cave to get Elliot, saying that the Gauguins have captured Pete. So the Gauguins grab Pete, put him in a sack, and they're going to ride off with him. As soon as Elliot gets into this little barn that they have, They drop nets on him. And it's a very nice animatronic dragon that they're using for this movie that in no way looks like the animation for Elliot.
Yeah. It's something that's sort of vaguely dragon-ish shaped that is covered with, you know, canvas and netting and stuff like that so that you can't actually see the mechanism. But yeah, it doesn't really fit the proportions they've set up for Elliot, and it doesn't kind of blend.
Elliot's able to break out and makes himself visible for the first time to the townsfolk, mostly scaring them off because, you know, dragon. And goes after the Gorgons and frees
Gorgons?
Gorgons. Yeah. 30 plus years of saying Gorgons with these guys, I mean, these people. I'll get it eventually. So, yeah, Elliot frees Pete from the Gorgons and burns their bill of sale.
Then dumps them into tar for good measure.
I don't know how that would hold up in the court of law, but it's a Disney movie. We need to get rid of these villains some kind of way.
Yeah.
So the Gorgons are gone. They have run away, and we will never see them again. But Dr. Terminus has a harpoon that he's planning to shove right through Elliot. But he's not paying attention, and in the entire scuffle, the rope has tied itself around Dr. Terminus's foot. As the harpoon goes off, a very cannon-like shot. And Dr. Terminus is launched straight out of the barn, straight across town, complete with a goofy holler because this is a Disney movie. So he ends up harpooning himself to, like, a post right by his wagon that he's been using this whole movie. And he pleads, Elliot, if you have any sheddings, any spare parts, I will gladly buy them off you for my medicines. Don't you have any business sense? And Elliot says, no, I don't have any business sense. I'm a dragon. What do I need with money?
Yeah, it seems kind of weird to be like, hey, dragon, don't you want to be rich? Which I guess, you know, yeah, dragon gold hoard, but they don't really spend it. It's just that seems to be their preferred bedding.
Yeah.
You know, it's like paying me in mattresses. Actually, if you would pay me in mattresses, that'd be amazing. Would make my life so much better if people would pay me in mattresses. Hire me for a job and pay me in mattresses.
Do I get to put a P underneath to make sure you feel it?
No.
Okay, so Elliot pushes the cart off, and that's it. We hear a crash sound, but we never actually see the cart get destroyed.
That would have cost extra money.
Yeah, they're not going to break that prop. But that's also the end of Dr. Terminus and Hoagie.
Yeah.
But we have one more thing left. The storm rages on here in town, that an electric pole breaks and falls, and Elliot catches it just before it hits the mayor, the teacher, and other town officials. And this is the first time that they've seen Elliot, with the mayor saying, oh, there really is a dragon, and he saved us.
It's interesting how much evidence there is of the dragon, and how most of the town accepts it much earlier, but like a few of the main people are just head in the sand about it until it stares them in the face, literally.
I think it's one of those tropes. I guess this trope lasted longer started earlier than I thought of. Adults are dumb and the kids know everything.
Yeah.
It's still it's a bad trope. Anyway, but we're not out of the woods yet because the storm has caused a wave to crash through and extinguish the flame on the lighthouse. And Nora and Lampy are trying to relight the lighthouse, relight the fire. They've replaced the wick, but all the matches are wet, so they can't light the fire. Pete and Elliot make it back to the lighthouse. Elliot does the stupid thing and goes up the stairs. You're a dragon. You could have climbed.
Yeah.
But we need to have one more bit of... we need to do this for story purposes. So they go up the stairs. He's getting stuck in the stairwell because he's a big old dragon. And they need to light the flame. Elliot tries to light the flame, but again, his body is stuck in the staircase and is doing everything to try to, and he can't light the flame too well. The storm, as this is happening, Nora is looking out onto the ship because the ship is about to crash into the beach. The wind blows her, turns her around, and she's face to face with Elliot for the first time. He's real. He's really real.
Yeah, that's kind of what everyone has been telling you. Thanks for believing us, your family.
So yeah, taking the deepest breath possible, Elliot lets out the flame, which lights up the lighthouse, and the ship turns around just before it hits the rocks, and Nora gives Elliot a big old kiss, which makes him turn invisible. Embarrassment, I assume?
Yeah, that's what I thought that was supposed to be.
Yeah, so let's get to the morning. Somehow the fish have returned to the pond. I think it was just the storm that blew them in, but they're all saying, oh, the dragon did it.
Sure, fine.
Yeah, so they're all celebrating that, hey, they saved their lives, they brought the fish back, everything is normal. And here comes Paul on the lifeboat, onto the pier in the beach, and he yells out, Nora, Nora, where are you? Nora turns around, it's Paul! And there's a happy reunion of this couple we only heard about and never really saw anything romantic about them before. We could have used a flashback with them at some point, you know? That would have been nice.
No, that would have just made this movie longer.
So, where's Paul been this entire time for the last year? He's had amnesia.
Of course he has.
Yeah, apparently he was the only survivor of the shipwreck. He's been in a hospital with amnesia. And then Elliot knocked the bed over and he gave his memory back because it's tropes.
Yeah.
So now Pete is finally with a family that loves him. He has, I guess Nora is his mom and Paul's going to be his dad. And he's got Grandpa Lampy. And everything is good. Everything is fine. So Elliot's gonna go. Pete no longer needs him. He's gonna go. Apparently he's found out that there's another kid out there who needs help, and he's going to go help them. Elliot, if you're gonna help that kid the way you've been helping Pete, don't bother.
Yeah.
But he's gonna fly away. He's gonna help another kid as Elliot walks home with his new family. But everything's happy, because
Pete's never going to see him again. Goodbye, Elliot.
Remember, you have to be invisible. And that's the movie.
Oh, my God.
This was the movie I saw all the time as a kid, and I think because I was the right age to watch this movie. Does this movie have the magic? No.
Oh, my God, no.
Like I said, any happiness, any happiness I have with this movie is purely nostalgia. I'm going to admit that now, because I just remember watching this movie, me and my little brother watching this on the Disney Channel, and that's it, because this movie does not hold up, does not stand the test of time. There's not much we can really... Like, I really wanted to do this episode, and I apologize for making you sit through this, Kiki.
Yeah, you've been pitching this one basically since we started, and finally I was like, well, because I had never seen it, because despite the fact that it had a dragon, this did not look like my sort of thing. Like, every clip I'd ever seen of it, I just kind of went like, yeah, it doesn't really look like my sort of thing. And I really, you know, this podcast isn't for, like, ragging on movies. Like, that was not why we created this. You know, we wanted to talk about stuff that we liked and, you know... in the hopes that it would hold up. Mm-hmm. And I know this one's nostalgic for you, but yeah, I can't imagine this one holding up. It's just, oh my god. And it really does feel like an interminable slog when you are sitting through it.
Yeah. Like I said, this was nostalgic for me, and maybe it should stay in the past. Again, I've heard that the remake is a little bit better. I haven't seen it.
Well, it's not a musical, for one thing. And for another thing, I kind of read a synopsis of it during my research, and it looks like they went like for the Dark and Gritty reboot kind of feel. Because it's like apparently like Pete's parents die in a car crash at the beginning of the movie and stuff. I mean, it I don't know. It seems much darker.
Yeah, so yeah, this one doesn't hold up. If this is one of your favorite Disney movies, I apologize, but this one doesn't really hold up as much as I thought it would. Cuz I remember like the animation is decent. I mean, it's not as good as other stuff of the era, but the animation's good.
I do like the design of the dragon. It's a cute little dragon, you know. Well, I mean, it's a cute giant dragon, but you know, it's that goofy Don Bluth style. I mean, I like that.
I wish that if this had just been like we mentioned, like an hour long TV special, it would have been much better. If this had been a straight up fully animated movie, it would have been much better. But as a 2-hour musical that is mostly live action, the dragon is only animated for very little of it. They really made him invisible just to save money. Yeah, no. I'm sorry. And that's all we can really say about this one. So let's watch something better next week.
I want to watch something better next week. I vote for better. What do you got?
So let's talk about another movie that we've been talking about for a bit. The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. A Disney classic. There's a lot of backstory in this movie. Let's see if this movie is better than Pete's Dragon.
Please be better than Pete's Dragon.
So join us next week for the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. And we will talk to you all later. Bye.
Bye.
I'm going to go watch WandaVision again.
Yeah. Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.
All wings, check in.
Red Button, standing by.
Helen Reddy, standing by.